Access to quality mental and physical health services can be a challenge for many people, even those with good health insurance and plenty of care providers nearby. However, for individuals of color, various ethnicities, and people dealing with severe or chronic mental illness, finding the treatment they need is even a steeper hill to climb. Welcome to Advancing Health, a podcast from the American Hospital Association. I'm Tom Hederle with AHA Communications. Studies have shown that among individuals diagnosed with a severe or chronic mental illness, Black people are less likely to seek out treatment than whites, often facing barriers such as cost, transportation, and even provider bias. In this podcast hosted by the AHA's Rebecca Chicky, Senior Director of Behavioral Health, Tracy Lavalias, Executive Director of Behavioral Health with Penn Medicine, Lancaster General Health, talks about the steps Penn Medicine has taken to increase access to care among underserved patient populations. They include cultural competency training, help with language barriers, and most importantly, integration of mental and physical health services that are more likely to flag a problem and direct a patient to the care they need. Let's join Rebecca and Tracy.
Thank you, Tom. Indeed, it is an honor and a privilege to be here today with Tracy. Tracy and I are going to be talking about the value of integration. And when I say integration, I mean integrating physical and behavioral health. In particular, the value of integration as it relates to improving access to care for historically underserved patient populations, individuals of color, various ethnicities, as well as individuals with severe and persistent or chronic mental illnesses. Often you may think of disorders or conditions such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder when you think of someone with a severe or chronic mental illness. All of those patient populations that I've just mentioned often struggle even more than others to improve access to care. And Tracy has experience and expertise in having seen the value of integration and how it can reduce stigma and increase access to care. So enough about me. I'm going to turn now to Tracy and say, Tracy, can you share with the listeners a couple of things? One, what are the realities of the challenges of accessing mental health services and treatment for addiction for individuals of color, as well as what are some of the reasons for those challenges?
Well, first of all, Rebecca, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this very important topic. We have been on this journey at Penn Medicine for a long period of time. And one of the things that you mentioned was the disparity amongst individuals of color versus individuals who are white. So I'll give you a little bit of information that we found that even when individuals are diagnosed with a mental health disorder, Hispanics and Blacks are traditionally less likely to seek mental health treatment than whites. This has been highlighted in many studies, and it certainly has manifested in our particular environment here. There are a variety of barriers to receiving mental health care for individuals of color. Some are cost. We did a recent study here in our community about the stigma associated with mental health. Recently, there was a campaign called Five Signs that helped to reduce that, but we're still not at the level of where individuals can speak about mental health in the same way that we speak about physical health, and that has been exacerbated in the communities of color. Also, biases on providers. Interestingly enough, we spent a great deal of time just having a campaign to reduce the biases of our provider community. We focused on our emergency department here. We've also focused on our treatment providers. We've instituted things such as cultural competency to try to reduce those barriers. In many cases, some of our communities of colors have poor health literacy. We do have a large immigrant population. And so, as you know, mental health means different things to different individuals. And the interpretation of mental health is perceived differently in certain cultures. So that's an issue. Sometimes there's poor insight into navigation. Our mental health system, particularly in the state of Pennsylvania, is not easy to navigate. So in some cases, being able to navigate the health system and the insight into navigating the health system calls for some concern for those populations. There's geographic inaccessibility. And what I mean by that is poor transportation. In many cases, these individuals don't have an opportunity to access it because of not having transportation in the right means. And then there's other things like linguistic or, as I stated earlier, just cultural barriers. And so in many cases, the language is not being spoken in a way that can be communicated in order for these individuals to receive care. So, you know, those are the realities that we deal with on a regular basis and some of the things that we work to try to reduce to make sure that those individuals have the same level of access that our white patients do.
Well, it's particularly timely that we're having this discussion now, Tracy. For the listeners, we are releasing this podcast in the month of July, and July is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And the challenges that Tracy just described, I will share just briefly a personal journey. I am white, and I had a family member who was suffering from major depression and had what I would call the golden egg of health plans and many connections. I've been in this field for over 30 years, and so I know the chiefs of psychiatry at stellar organizations across the country. And even so, trying to get treatment for my family member, it took over 2 months to get in to see a psychiatrist. And even then, they did not take my health insurance. As an individual who is connected, reasonably educated in trying to navigate the mental health system, as well as having, you know, stellar health insurance, thanks to the American Hospital Association, it was still a struggle. We want to talk about the value of integration, but first I want to ask you about another patient population, as I mentioned earlier, those with severe and persistent mental illness, chronic mental illness. I don't know if the listeners know this, but individuals with chronic mental illness usually die somewhere between 15 and 25 years earlier than individuals without schizophrenia or bipolar. And you may jump to the conclusion that that might be due to higher suicide rates. Indeed, it is not. They die most often from their physical illnesses, which they are not taking care of because of lack of access to both physical health and mental health services. So can you speak a little bit to that? Because that's also a health disparity. And I wonder how you have been addressing that and what you know about their challenges and the realities.
Yeah, Rebecca, you bring up a really important point, and I appreciate the conversation around this. And in fact, we try to stress this issue locally and any opportunity we get to kind of speak about this. But these are preventable diseases in many cases that individuals with serious mental illness interact with and die from earlier than the same population that does not have a serious mental illness. Things such as, you know, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and, you know, complying with insulin. These are different types of things that are preventable. The largest percentage of care in our particular, in any network, is through primary care. And we have found that individuals with serious mental illness do not seek this level of care out as much as they should. And particularly those, as you spoke of, we spoke about earlier, those that are in minority communities, they have not accessed the primary care services as much as we would like. In many cases, those individuals seek care in traditional mental health or in inpatient environments. Such in many cases, we found them in our emergency department. So the fact of the matter is that individuals with significant severe mental illness do not access their primary care as often. And then you add on top of that, those individuals that are communities of color access those primary care resources less. And subsequently, it leads to those factors that cause premature death, you know, cigarette smoking, things of that nature, poor diet, and those types of issues that can be addressed if they went to a primary care physician.
So now that we've painted a, unfortunately, fairly bleak picture for the listeners here, let's give them a bit of light, a bit of hope. How can and does integration help to reduce these disparities? Give me some examples.
What we found here, I did a lot of, my doctoral dissertation was done on our primary care offices here. We did a study, this is going back maybe 7 years ago now, and we utilized 4 primary care sites here. And we went to look about 3 different factors, actually, we were really focusing on. First factor was there a reduction in the issues that we just spoke about, some of those issues that were preventable? Did they actually comply with the primary care physician's recommendations for those individuals that are receiving integrated care within a primary care practice? And the other components that we spoke about as we wanted to see if there was a reduction in the emergency room utilization of those individuals that received primary care and mental health services within the primary care practice. And the last factor that we focused on was whether or not those individuals sought care in our emergency department. Remember, I spoke about traditionally those individuals sort of surface in our emergency department due to the lack of primary care resources. The study found that we had a 50% reduction in those individuals receiving care under primary care integration. So they were less likely to come to the emergency department. There was a significant reduction of stigma in the primary care office based upon the fact that these individuals did not seek services or receive services under the umbrella or title of a mental health facility. There was more compliance with the recommendations of their medication management or the recommendations of their primary care physician. And this was primarily based upon the fact that they may have been depressed. There may have been other factors that were focused on their mental health issues that caused them not to take their physical health medication. So the fact that we were integrating care within a primary care office and allowing these services to be seen as seamless really improve the quality of care for those individuals. And as a bifactor of that, there was a significant increase in provider satisfaction. So not only did the patients get better and services delivered in a more qualitative fashion, but the provider satisfaction just increased. So I think that's the positive side of integrating mental health into your primary care offices.
So I'm going to emphasize again some of the key points you just said. One, with all the workforce challenges that are out there right now, if you can improve provider satisfaction, that is a positive impact. Equally, perhaps even more importantly, what you said is that you improved patient outcomes. That's what we got into healthcare for in the first place, right? Is to improve individuals' quality of health and ability to live their best lives. You reduce stigma through integration. And then I'm going to connect a dot here, so please keep me honest if this is not the case. But you said you reduced visits to the emergency department by around 50%. And so that's correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And every emergency department visit, it's not the least costly level of care, I will say. And so you're reducing the total cost of care for that individual as a whole. And you're also improving access to other emergency services because the emergency room is not treating someone who could have been treated in a lower level of care. Well, is there a story that you might want to share for the listeners? Of course, not identifying a name. But is there a story that you might want to share to illustrate this on a personal level?
We had an individual, and I spent a lot of time with this individual, and he was a parent of an individual that was a chronic behavioral health patient. And when I mean by chronic, the symptomology had become so severe that she would cycle through our emergency department on a regular basis. This particular situation all escalated up to our CEO, and CEO sent the information to me. So I had several conversations with the parent of this individual who was really reaching out for help and really didn't have the ability or capacity because he had been dealing with this particular issue for such a long period of time. It manifested in complaints But really, when you drill down and had a more conversation with him, it was about access and the fact that this individual had not accessed our services within our PCP. One thing led to another, and I'm shortening the story for because of the time frame, but imagine this situation went on for about 6 months. We begin to build a bridge with the parent who, in fact, began to build a bridge with the daughter. We connected this daughter with our integrated care within our primary care offices. And they're currently in all our primary care offices now. So we integrated them based upon the location that was closest. She immediately connected with the therapist there. There was less of a stigma associated with the services that she received. And she just got better, significantly better throughout the course of time. Her parent was a conduit because she was limited linguistically and really reached out to us to talk to us about the care that they received in this environment, the therapist, the integration of the primary care doctor addressing the physical health needs. She became much more compliant with her physical health medication, which was a conduit to her being in the emergency department as well. So I point that story out just to say that that is probably one that came to my attention, but that's the norm for what we have seen in our primary care offices when we integrate our mental health clinicians there. And it has been certainly a positive outcome for the system because these individuals are receiving timely care and just getting better, Rebecca. And so I'm really, really significantly proud of the work that they've done there.
I think what you just described was truly patient-centered care. So thank you for doing that and for sharing that story. As we close out the podcast today, is there a call to action that you'd like to perhaps challenge or encourage the listeners to consider doing?
I think a couple of things. One thing that I would say is that you had alluded to this earlier. There are significant challenges from a workforce perspective to be able to keep up with the amount of patients that need mental health care. So in the mental health field, you can see it nationally that there are just not enough providers, not enough individuals going into the field. So I would encourage those who have an apathy for this population to go into this field, contribute in any way that you can to this population so that these individuals will have the same quality of life that we've grown accustomed to. The second thing that I would say is we talked about the disparity between the physical health and the mental health and really trying to close that gap as it relates to stigma. We talked a little bit about it earlier. I would like to prioritize things such as mental health first aid. You know, we get first aid in many of our jobs that we go into, particularly if you're in the healthcare field, and it's a way to sort of prevent the physical issues if you're so encountered to try to stabilize the patient. The same things are taught as relates to mental health first aid, the ability for individuals, loved ones, family members, friends to engage with individuals because in most cases they're the ones that see them first, to be able to do some of the first aid, mental health first aid. Things that could stabilize the patient prior to them engaging with the system. It broadens our ability to have access and it creates the opportunity to reduce stigma. So in those cases, I think that would be my two calls to actions.
Thank you so much. I think I'm about to quote Maya Angelou, but as you were saying that, this quote came to mind, once you know better, do better. And that would be my call to action. So as we close this out, there are a number of resources around the value of integration, the value of integrating physical and behavioral health that can be found at www.aha.org/behavioral health. This podcast will be available there and, of course, on AHA's Advancing Health podcast. Tracy, thank you so much for the work that you do and your willingness to share your insights and expertise with us today.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I appreciate you the opportunity to discuss this important topic, and I'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to Advancing Health. Please subscribe and rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.